So remind us this day of your promise to each and every one of us. May we go from this place remembering and reminded that you have a plan in action in our life. Amen. What do you do to help you remember something? When you've got something to remember that's important, what do you do to help you remember? So being someone who isn't very great at remembering things, I'm hoping now to get some good advice. So anyone want to share how they do remembering? Leave yourself notes, yeah? Write it on your hand, yeah? Anyone else got anything they do? Steve? Not in the handkerchief, look at that, it's classic. Yeah, so things you might do to remember. I have a whiteboard in my hallway, if you come to my house you'll see it, and I write notes on there, so that when I go past the hallway I'm reminded of things I've got to try and do. So that's how I do remembering in my life. But it's a really important thing, isn't it, to learn how to remember. Because we quickly forget. We quickly lose track of what's going on. We quickly forget what we are meant to be all about. And going right back to the beginning of the scriptures. You have Genesis in the beginning, a book about the beginnings. And we get to Exodus, we meet the story of the people of Israel who have ended up in Egypt because of Joseph in Genesis. And then under persecution and are in slavery by Pharaoh. And you have the story of Moses, who is called by God to come and liberate the people of God out of Egypt and bring them into the promised land. And before, on the last plague, on the 10th plague, where the firstborn son of the Egyptians dies, that night they're having the Passover meal. A meal that represents a sacrifice being made on behalf of the people so that actually people can move from death into life. And it says in Exodus 12:14, it says, "This is a day," he's talking about Passover, "you are to commemorate for the generations to come. You shall celebrate it as a festival to the Lord, a lasting ordinance." He says, this meal that I've given you to do on this particular day, I want you to carry on doing that as a lasting memory to what I have done for you. That I am the liberating God who's brought you out of Egypt and brought you into new life. And so they were called to commemorate it. And so today we're going to look at communion from the standpoint of commemoration. Of how is communion an action of commemoration? It's probably most familiar to us because it's the one we talk about probably most. That we do this in remembrance of him. And so we probably have more of a concept of this one. But I want to take us back into the Jewish roots of what we're commemorating today. And so in Exodus 6 to 7, there are four things that come out which are then celebrated in the Passover meal. And the first one, it says in Exodus 6:6-7, it says, "I am the Lord, and I will bring you out from under the yoke of the Egyptians." That's the first thing that's remembered in Passover, that the people are brought out of the yoke of the Egyptians. Secondly, "I will free you from being slaves to them, and I will redeem you." I will free you from being slaves with them, and I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and a mighty act of judgment. I will take you as my own people, and I will be your God. And there are these four things that are part of the story that God says to Moses. This is what the Exodus is all about. This is what bringing people out is all about. It's in Exodus 6:6-7. And in the Jewish Passover meal, there are four aspects. Those four things there are represented by four cups that are drunk at the Passover meal. And so those four cups are the cup of sanctification, the cup of judgment, the cup of redemption, and the cup of praise, which represent those four things that we've just heard talked about. The fact that God will bring them out of the yoke of the Egyptians, which is about sanctifying them. The fact that he will free them from being slaves. There's a judgment that comes upon the Egyptians. There's redemption. He says, "I will redeem you with an outstretched arm." And the last one is a cup of praise, which is, "I will take you for my own people and I will be your God." There's a sense of praising God. And in the Passover meal, which we're going to look at a little bit today, I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but I'm going to go through some aspects of it to help you understand where we get our communion from and what Jesus was doing at the Last Supper to help us understand what they were commemorating and what was going on there. So these are the four things that were being looked at. These are the four cups that were a part of the meal. So I've put up four cups of wine. It's not actually wine. It's Ribena. Just to represent that on the table today. So in the Jewish meal, you'd have four cups drunk at different times during the Passover meal. If you ever wonder why the disciples find it hard to stay awake in the Garden of Gethsemane, at a Passover meal, you drink a lot of wine. You drink a lot of wine, at least 4 glasses of wine, which, to me, that's a lot of wine. So you drink a lot of wine. There's another thing that we need to know about. There are these 4 cups, which represent different things, which are drunk at different times in the meal. And the other thing we need to know about is then there's what's called matzah, which is the bread that they use. It's unleavened bread, it's flat, it's crispy, it's like a wafer. And Steve actually had some, and so I bought some. These are quite small ones, but basically it's like a wafer. It's unleavened bread, and the unleavened bread side of it is a representation of the fact that we are without sin. So how you made bread in the olden days was that you make your bread, you make your dough, you take a little bit of that dough and leave it aside for the next day. And the next day you'd use your sourdough to make the dough of the following day. And you take a little bit and you carry that on for the next day and the next day. When God says, don't use leavened bread, what he's saying is, that is a demonstration of the repeat of sin. That from one generation to the next generation, sin continues. So by saying it's unleavened bread, it was a physical symbol of saying without sin. That something different is happening here. There's a redemption happening here in having flat bread. It's also about speed, about how the people of God, they left in haste. And therefore there wasn't time for the bread to rise. So the matzah was this picture of being sinless and about haste. Now at the Passover meal, what happens is there's these pieces of matzah, and there are 3 pieces of matzah, which are much bigger than this, but these are some representations here. And they're in a little bag. And the 3 of them sit in a little bag, and they take them out of the bag, and they pull out the middle piece. And with the middle piece, they then break it in half, and then half of it, they wrap in a napkin, or a cloth, and then they go and hide it somewhere in the house, whilst the kids aren't looking, they go and hide it in the house somewhere for later on in the meal. Now, what's interesting is there are 3 pieces of matzah. And if you look at Jewish understanding, no one quite understands why there's 3 pieces of matzah. But from a Christian point of view, we can look at it this way. There are 3 pieces that come out of a bag. And it's a representation of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And the reason why it's the second piece that's taken out is because Jesus is the second person of the Godhead, and he is the one who is broken for us, who is hidden away in the grave, and then later on we'll talk about how he is then found. So this imagery that we can take from the Passover meal, the sense of the second person of the Trinity is broken for us. For the Jewish people who, when they break that piece of bread, for them it's a reminder that God parted the Red Sea for them. So the breaking of that bread, that snapping in two of that second piece, is saying it was because of this that God meant that there was a way from slavery into new life. That it was because of the parting of the Red Sea, it's because of that breaking of the sea being opened up, that there was, we went from death to life, that God made a way for us to enter into new life. So this breaking of this bit of bread is really, really crucial. So when Jesus, it says in the story of the Last Supper, Jesus took a piece of bread and he broke it. It's talking about this second piece of matzah at the beginning of the meal. He takes this piece of bread and he breaks it in two. He says, this is my body broken for you. What he's saying is, my body being broken is the access from death to new life. And it talks about, isn't it, how the temple veil was torn in two. About how suddenly there was access to God because of the death of Jesus. So Jesus is saying, where there was a barrier before between you being in your slavery and you going into new life, he says, I am the breaking that God has done so that there is now access from death into new life. So he was saying something pretty radical at that point to his disciples. Saying, my body being broken for you, it's like the same thing that God did with the parting of the Red Sea. That meant there was liberation for you. That's pretty spectacular. But then this piece of bread that is held on till later on is also in Jewish understanding, this piece that is hidden is a representation of the Lamb. And so in places where there were Jews living who weren't in Israel, they wouldn't necessarily have a lamb at Passover time. Because in the Jewish text, it says that the lamb should be taken from the flocks of Israel. So if you were living in a different place, you wouldn't want to have a lamb that wasn't from Israel. And so in order not to break the tradition of that, the bread became a representation of the lamb. And this bit that was broken off and hidden away becomes a representation of the lamb. So that's just something, just hold on to that thought just for the moment. So during this meal, several cups of wine are drunk. The first one is the cup of sanctification, which is drank at the beginning. Then you've got the cup of judgment. And at that point, they drink this cup, and these questions are asked by the youngest member of the room. Whoever's the youngest asks four questions, which are basically, why is this night so important? Why is this night different from all other nights? And the story of the Passover is told. They talk about how God brought judgment on the Egyptians and how the plagues came. They tell their story about how they were in slavery, there was God's judgment, and then there was liberation. So you've got to think, the disciples are there on the Last Supper. Jesus has broken this bread and said, I am now the way to encounter God. Then the story is told, and it's normally the youngest is the one who says these questions, and the youngest also often reclines on whoever's leading the Passover meal. Whoever's leading that, the youngest will often recline on the leader. So when it says in John's Gospel how John was reclining on Jesus' chest, it's probably the fact that John was probably the youngest disciple. So it was probably John who said, why is this night so different to all other nights? And so there they are in the room. They're drinking this second cup of wine about the story about how God's going to bring judgment. And then they have their Passover meal. They eat their lamb, they eat bitter herbs, and they eat various other things as well in the meal. And then it says, in Luke's Gospel, it says, after supper, he took a cup. You see, because after you ate your meal, you'd then take the third cup. But before you take the third cup, you'd go back to this is the point where the kids would go off and run to go and try and find the piece of bread from earlier on that was hidden away. So then suddenly you send all the kids off after you've eaten the meal. The kids will run around and try and find this piece of bread that's been hidden in a napkin. The piece of bread that's been broken, they go and find what's been hidden. And then they go and find it, and there's big celebration, there's lots and lots of joy, and they bring it back, and then they take that bread, they break it up into small pieces, and everyone has a piece of that bread. Because that bread represents the lamb. They are all taking part in the lamb. So when we come together to the communion table and we are taking of the bread, sharing that, it's like what the Jewish people do in taking this piece of matzah. And that particular action of taking this hidden piece and sharing it round, afikomen, I don't know how you say that, it's a Greek word, not a Hebrew word, which is interesting. But it's the only Greek word that's applied to the Jewish Passover. It's bizarre. And when you look at the Greek, where it comes from, what it comes from is a word which is ikonon, which is basically means I came. And so it's basically they're sharing in the lamb that has come. That's what they're doing at that point in time. So you've got this pretty radical moment where Jesus is saying, I am this piece of bread that's broken. I am the way from death into life. I am the access point from slavery to sin into new life. We go into the promises of God. And then he's basically saying, I am the lamb who was hidden away. He dies. And then actually, when you enter into partaking in this, I am the lamb who has come for you. It's pretty staggering, isn't it? It's pretty amazing stuff. This is happening in the Jewish feast. And then after they've done this, and they've shared in this piece of bread, they then take the third cup, which is the cup of redemption. And it's this cup, the third cup of redemption. And so Jesus is saying, the cup of redemption is the cup that I am offering to you, to redeem you. That's what I am offering to you, redemption. So the cross is about redemption. This is my blood shed for you. When they would have this cup, the children would be told to go and run to the front door, to go and check in the streets to see whether Elijah has come. What I mean by that is, has the Messiah come? Because they believe that one who was like Elijah, who did the miracles of Elijah, would come. So the kids are sent out to the front door to check and see whether the Messiah has come. And the kids would look around, and then they would run back in and say whether or not the Messiah had come. But in a symbol and sign that the Jewish people have an expectation of the Messiah coming, is that they would always have an extra cup on the table, which is called the cup of Elijah, which no one would drink from. And it's at this point in the meal that Jesus, at the point of the third cup, drinking the third cup of wine, the cup of redemption, that he doesn't just take his cup, he takes the cup of Elijah and says, this cup. He's saying, I am the Messiah. We've just had the bread that says, I have come. And he's then taking the cup of Elijah and saying, I am the Messiah. And it's from this cup that you find salvation. It's from this cup that you find redemption. It's in my blood being shed for you that you find redemption. So they would have been pretty staggered and amazed at what Jesus was saying to them on that night. And then there's this thing that Jesus says, which Steve read to us from Matthew's Gospel, where he says, I will not drink again of the fruit of this vine until I come again. And what he's talking about here is the fourth cup. Because the fourth cup of wine is the cup of praise. And so what's going on here is Jesus has taken the cup of Elijah, they've drunk and they've shared this cup together for the forgiveness of sins, this redemption going on, and then you naturally go into the fourth cup. He says, no, I won't drink the fourth cup until I come again. Until I'm in my kingdom and in my glory, I'm not going to drink that cup again until I'm with you. And then we talked about last week about how the communion table is about that symbol of the future banquet in heaven that we are called and invited to. So what Jesus is saying is, I'm not going to drink of this cup of praise until we meet again in heaven, until we're at that fellowship feast in heaven. So in the meantime, what we are called to do as Christians is to take the Aphikomen, or whatever it's called, and the cup of Elijah, and those are the two symbols that we have as our communion feast. We don't need to have the whole of the Passover meal. Why? Because Jesus fulfills it all. So when we come to eat the bread, we are taking the bread which is broken, the symbol of from death into new life, the God who has made a way. So his body being broken is that miracle that God has done. And then the bread is hidden away, it goes into the tomb, and then it is found. And when you partake of that bread there, you're saying, I am sharing in the Passover lamb. Remember, that bread is unleavened, and so it has no sin. The sinless lamb is broken for us, hidden away, it is found, and we share in that together. And then we take the cup of the Messiah, the cup of Elijah, which is in the symbol of the third cup of redemption, and he says, this is my blood shed for you. This is for the forgiveness of sins. Drink this, all of you, in memory of me. He says, we're not going to do the fourth cup because that's reserved when we meet again in heaven. That's your future hope. So it's this staggering understanding of what we're commemorating. The Lamb who is broken and the Messiah who has come, who shares his life for all of us. And when we go back to 1 Corinthians 11, where Paul gives us the command about the Lord's Supper, he says, do this in remembrance of me. He says, do this. It's an imperative command that we do this. And in the Greek, that word to do this has the sense of repetition. It's when we are called to repeat. Some people, some scholars will tell you the fact that it was only for the disciples. Some people will tell you that you should only do communion very, very occasionally. It's Jesus saying, constantly do this in remembrance of me. Why? Because we forget really easily. It's so easy, isn't it, to be going about our lives, and we haven't spent some time with Jesus recently, to suddenly not let our lives be shaped by what he would want for us. We just fall out of that pattern so easily and so quickly. And Jesus knows this. And the whole pattern of the scriptures is about a God who says, remember. when they pass over the Jordan Sea. They take stones out of the riverbed, they place them on the side, and it says, why do you do this? God says, do this. Why? So that kids, when they see those stones and they go, what's this about? You then tell them the story of what God has done for you. You see, and so God wants us to remember because we so easily and so quickly forget. And so when we come to the communion table, we're doing a command of Jesus saying, do this. And what we're saying is, we want to do this to put Jesus at the forefront of our mind and our thinking. So when I come around the table, what I'm commemorating is something that needs to have an impact on my life in the here and now today. He says, do this in remembrance of me. He didn't say, do this in remembrance of my death. Do this in remembrance of the cross. Do this in remembrance of me. He's saying, put me at the forefront of your thinking and your mind. When you come to this table, you're saying, Jesus, I need to remember that it's about you. That everything in life is about you. And I want to put you at the forefront. I remember what you've done for me and therefore how it impacts my life now. See, when you remember, when we have things like Remembrance Sunday, what we're remembering is the cost that was paid so that we have freedom today. When we come to communion, that's the same thing we're remembering here. The cost that was paid so that we have life today. And it's so easy, isn't it, for people to take freedom for granted. We see it all the time, freedom being taken for granted, and people don't realize that the cost that was fought for so people have the freedom that they have today. And when we come to the Lord's table, there's this moment where it's a form of instruction to us to remember to live in the freedom that we have now, recognizing the cost that the cost that's been paid so we can have that freedom. It's saying, I come to this table and don't take grace for granted. I don't take my freedom in Jesus for granted. I recognize that there was a cost that was paid so that I could have this freedom. And therefore, because I have this freedom and it's cost something, I would choose to live this freedom well. And therefore, when we do things like we don't live in the truth of the freedom of the gospel, we're not really allowing the cost of the cross to really pay for our life. We're choosing to still live under slavery, rather than the cost of judgment on Christ, rather than living in the freedom. So when we come to the table, we're saying, I choose to live in the freedom of God. I choose not to take that for granted. I choose to live in the new life. I choose to live in the new promise. I choose to live in the fullness of what God has for me. See, I remember what God has done so that I now know what I can do. There's a sense of instruction that comes out of remembrance. In the same way that when we remember the world wars, we remember we don't want to have another war. We don't want war. It instructs us into a way of peace. And the cross is the same thing. It is a cost that has been paid, which instructs us into a way of peace and a way of new life. Do this in remembrance of me. He's saying, remember that there's a cost to the love that is shown. For God so loved the world that he gave his only son. That his love is demonstrated in his sacrifice. That there was a cost to the love of God being made known to you. It's very easy to say in society, and you hear it all the time, people go, well, if God's all loving, he wouldn't do that. And people forget that God shows his love at a cost. And when we just take God's love for granted, it's a really sad case of affairs. Because God, in order to choose to love us, has cost him something. It's cost him himself. It's cost him his son. So when we come to this table, we are saying, wow, thank you, God, that you would love me so much that you would give your own son as a sacrifice for me, so that a cost was paid, so that my slavery could be paid for, so that I can now be set free. So I just want to leave you with this. The sense of instruction that comes from communion is this. Communion is an act of commemoration that is a marker that points us back in the right direction of living in the fullness of God's story. It's quite a mouthful. But what it's saying is, if you're here today and you think, I've lost direction, I'm not sure where I'm going, things feel a bit not sure at the moment, communion is a great place to come back to say, the marker point in my life is I choose to remember who Jesus is. I choose to put him back at the forefront of my thinking, back at the forefront of my mind, and allow that to direct me. Often we need to look back to a marker point in our life where we can then take new courage from in order to go forwards when we lost our way. If you get lost, best thing to do is try and get back to somewhere where you know where you are, to then make your path from there. And communion is like that marker point in the life of us as a fellowship of believers, where we come back to putting Christ at the forefront of our lives as the instruction of how we then move forward in that freedom and that new life. So as we come to the communion table now, the broken bread at the beginning of the Passover meal is about God making a way from slavery to sin into the freedom and new life of the promised land. It's hidden away and it is found. And we then all share in the Passover lamb, which is the bread. And then we come to the cup, which is the third cup of redemption. And rather than taking his own cup, he takes the cup of Elijah and says, this cup is for all of us to share. We all share now in the promise of the Messiah who has come. And that we look forward to the fourth cup, where one day we shall rejoice in heaven together, sharing in that fourth cup and saying we rejoice and praise the future hope that we have. So as we come to the table, we are commemorating, we're choosing to remember what Christ has done, but more importantly, who he is, what he represents. And that's why we don't share the whole of Passover. We don't need to. You can do. But we need to take the two elements that Jesus picks out as critical of explaining who he is, to keep doing, to keep repeating, to keep reminding us, because we so quickly forget who he is. So communion is the action of putting him at the forefront of our thinking, the forefront of our mind, so that it then changes how we then feel instructed in where to go next.